The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Honest, I think of all the jingles we play here on Highland Radio, that's my favourite when I'm in this seat, because it means I get to speak to the wonderful Michael Leddy. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Donald Kavanagh.
And also, it's either Fionnuala or Katie today. Delighted to say it's Katie, actually. It's always great fun when Katie's in. Katie, hello, how are you?
Hello, Donald. I'm very well. How are you? Happy Friday.
And happy Friday
happy
to you,
Friday.
Too. We're two of the few people staying in this building today, because quite a lot, as we said, on the road down to Kilkenny, and we wish them all safe travels.
I know, and the very best of luck to our very own news team and Mr. Hughes and the whole production that goes on behind this show. Very well deserved trip down the road today, so we're all thinking of them and have our fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. We're going to talk entertainment this week. Now, I think in fairness, over the course of the past week, the word legend tends to get bandied about an awful lot. An old legend, an everyday legendized.
This one's very kind of you, Donald, but you know,
indeed.
Like, it's very...
But let's talk about Maggie Smith, because,
that was Katie's introduction. Still.
Yeah.
No, well, me and Maggie Smith.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maggie Smith. Do you know what? I happened to catch the news probably very early on Facebook last Friday, was the 27th.
Yeah.
Before it seemed to kind of hit much of the news headlines. So I wasn't sure even whether it was true, but I felt like by being kicked in the stomach a little bit with this one. Absolute legend is right. I really wanted to kind of give her a good talking about today, I suppose, or a bit of a tribute to her. And like when I was going and doing a bit of research about it, I thought I can't possibly talk about everything that she's done, or we'd have to have a whole 3-hour show dedicated to her.
Huge filmography and
she is one of the only very few actresses or actors who has won the triple crown of acting, which is all three Academy, Tony and Emmy Award winner. So she's done everything, you know. Her theatre career ranged from 1952 to 1979. So she did National Theatre first, and then she hit Broadway and beyond, and she's done shows such as Chicago, Midsummer Night's Dream, Macbeth, and oh my goodness, I may have forgotten to write down a couple of them. But she has been in a plethora of theatre shows before she became a screen actress. But she is unbelievable. She was damed by Queen Elizabeth in 1990. Like that, she's won Academy Awards, BAFTA Awards, Emmy Awards, Golden Globe Awards. Like, the woman is just a walking award maker. Do you know what I like about her? Before I just continue, like, I'm just looking here at a couple of the things that she's done, like all the Harry Potter movies. She played Granny Wendy in Captain Hook in 1991. Also. She has this kind of sternness about her, but she's also so whimsical that she, as I remember as a child watching her, even in Sister Act and those kind of movies, that she was really warm, even though she's so stern. Do you know, like, she has this amazing ability to be on both ends of the spectrum.
And do it in an instant.
A
moment I've always loved. You know, in the scene in Deathly Hallows, where she summons the stone golems down to defend the school, and she summons them and she uses the spell. I can't remember the wording of the spell. And she's standing there beside Mrs. Weasley, and she summons them and she says, "Do your duty. Guard our school." And then turns and goes, I always wanted to use that. And the way she turns that, and just, it's so, as you said, it's whimsical, but she is absolutely believable. You know that she has just conjured up stone golem style monsters and told them to defend the school, and they're going to defend that school because she told them. And then she turns, and then, boom.
I know.
And immediately it's comedy. But that comedy doesn't make what she said previously any less believable. And that's a talent, because if you say something serious, then crack a joke.
Yeah.
The risk is the undermining, joke undermines and compromises what you said before. Yeah. Maggie Smith, still believe everything she said beforehand.
And that warmth that she brought, that's why she was good at authority figures, because of exactly what, Katie, you're saying there. That warmth, the whimsical, means that, you know, an authority figure could come off as cold and distant.
Yeah.
But she can bring the other dimension to it, where, like, for a headmistress role.
Yeah.
Humanity or something like that. And I mean, she's played with, like, she's starred, and when I say played alongside, I very much mean alongside, because it's definitely not under or over, but, like, you know, you're talking about some real heavy hitters in acting that she's kind of starred alongside, like Judi Dench. I love Judi Dench also.
Yes.
She was in Downton Abbey as well. Like, she was unbelievable in Downton Abbey, I thought. You know, her character, they wouldn't have been able to, I don't think the show would have been as successful without her character in it, because she was like that, so funny and so stern, you know, and again, just a pleasure to watch on screen. And you'd nearly, like, I was going down through some of her later work that I haven't seen yet, and I will watch it.
Have you watched The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie? That's the film that she won the Best Actor Oscar for.
No.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
It is. And her performance in that, she plays this dedicated teacher. Mm. And there's a point, and it's a clip I've seen. It circulated quite a bit, actually, on Facebook this week. It's one of a few clips that have circulated. But it's the clip where the headmistress wants to get rid of her because she is seen as, she's a really committed teacher who is teaching in the school, and she's trying to bring the girls and give the girls an overall education. And the headmistress believes that this is the wrong thing for their girls. And the headmistress is trying to basically force her into resigning, and she makes this wonderful speech that is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And again, it starts, and it's the sort of thing that could really turn you against her, because she just turns around and says, I will not resign. And she starts like this, and you're thinking, oh. But the way what comes through it, she manages to keep this sternness and this focus. And by the time she's finished, you're jumping in your chair. Go on, you tell her, girl, you tell her. Because what comes through is she never loses the sternness.
Yeah.
But what starts coming through is love and humanity.
Yeah.
Now, she is there going, and you're thinking, that's born from love.
Yes.
Now, and Maggie Smith was able to get that across in the delivery, without changing the delivery, without changing, but just the way she said it, it's just powerful.
Yeah.
The way
that was her signature role for her. Now, I remember that would be on TV from time to time.
Oh, it would crop up every now and then. It's a great...
But I mean, when I was younger, it was like, that was what you thought of, I think, for a long time.
And it is. It's one of those sort of slightly cliched films. School stuck in the past, based on outdated mores, new teacher comes in, tries to innovate, tries to do something new, the establishment fights against the teacher fights back, the teacher wins to a certain extent, with a few stings in the tail. That's basically the trope.
It's been done a lot.
But it is an amazing film. It really is. And it's amazing because of Maggie Smith.
Yeah. Well, what I find quite fascinating about her, even though, like, one could argue that maybe she's become quite typecast because of the type of of delivery that she gives in most of her performances, but she's absolutely not typecast in that her style of acting and the role that she plays is so diverse in so many different platforms. So you have her in the likes of Harry Potter. And then you have her in the likes of Downton Abbey, and you have her in all these different contextual roles that appeal to such a wide audience that, you know, like, she's appealable to so many different age groups, and it falls in line with so many different genres and categories and everything. So I just think she's phenomenal. She's one of those actresses that, you might not necessarily, well, actually, I don't know whether that's true. I was going to say you might not necessarily, if you saw her in a movie, would you go and see it? I absolutely would, actually. Mm-hmm. But
a lot of people probably would.
But, you know, she might not be at the forefront of your mind, but she's 100% amazing. She really is. She always has been. I saw her in an interview as well. It's obviously a replay of an old interview with Graham Norton. And she was being asked if she watched Downton Abbey, and she was very, no.
Yeah.
You know, but this, the side grin, you know, like she knew she was being funny, but she was so like the stern face. Like she's obviously, there's quite a lot of her own self that she brings to her roles as well. So, and that's probably why she does so well, because she's quite genuine, do you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, absolutely. She'll be hugely, hugely missed. Hugely missed. Yeah.
And I've always maintained when it came to Hogwarts, Dumbledore was the principal. McGonagall ran the school, as far as I was always concerned.
That's it.
Where do we go after discussing Maggie Smith? Want to go to something really exciting that the BBC is putting on, and that's Ludwig. Ooh. Michael, you've got this as one of your picks. And
you have,
very
very much so. I'm 3 episodes into this. The 6-episode detective series has started last week. 2 have aired, but they're available on the player, etc. So I've seen the 3. I've seen next week's episode as well. And I thought next week's episode is the strongest of the first 3. David Mitchell is the hub of this series, who I've come to adore from watching Would I Lie to You?
Absolutely.
I really appreciate
what an
incredibly funny man he is with the other two on that show. Being interviewed for the promotion of this show, I thought of you, Donald, because a couple of shows came up as he's passionately a fan of Bergerac, and also Midsommar Murders came up as something. And he says in that interview, which I think was on the One Show, that he wanted to do a show like that. He's wanted to do that cozy crime kind of thing.
Yeah.
So Ludwig is that kind of show, which I would have imagined they would put at the weekend. It feels to me like a Sunday night show like McDonald and Dodds, which I think it's very similar to, and I love McDonald and Dodds. But Ludwig is on a Wednesday night on BBC One. 2 episodes have aired. The 3rd one comes up next week. Basically, the premise is that Ludwig is the pen name of this gentleman who is a bit of a recluse. He writes cryptic crosswords, and he does not go out or engage with the outside world at all. He's just in his own world, and he's super smart. In the first moments of the first episode, he gets a message, an urgent message from his sister-in-law, summoning him to Cambridge, which is like 100-something miles away. He doesn't really want to go, but she sort of emotionally blackmails him into going and visit. And when he arrives, his sister-in-law explains that her husband, his brother, and I'll say more about that in a moment, has vanished mysteriously, leaving a note for her, telling her a few things in the note. One of the things he says is, if anybody comes asking questions about me, don't tell them anything. And also, do not believe anything they say. He also advises her to run away and take their teenage son and flee and sorts of things. She, of course, decides she's not doing any of that. She's going to find out what's happened to her husband, and she has enlisted the brother. She says that there are no clues about the house as to what's going on, but there are probably clues in his workplace. And she enlists the brother, very reluctantly, to go into the workplace for, says, Gwyn, it'll be an hour, you'll get away with it, because the brother is the identical twin of the missing man. So she says, you can get in there, just keep your head down, don't talk to anybody, get into his office, search for a few things, get some clues. The brother, the man who's missing, is a high-ranking police detective. So our very reluctant hero goes down to the police station, tries his level best to keep out of the way of everybody, which is very funny, because he doesn't know people's names. When somebody stands beside him in the elevator and says, Detective Taylor, and he's like, hello, you. Keeps going, keeps his head down. And as he's about to enter his office, one of the younger detectives runs over and says, Gov, we caught one, we caught a hot one, come on. So he gets dragged along reluctantly to a murder scene. Now, it turns out, as seasoned TV watchers will imagine, he's actually quite good at solving murders because it's the way his brain works. So that's the premise of the series. Every episode will have a very complex murder. At the centre of it is this guy. His name is not Ludwig, but that's his pen name. He is awkward around people. So there's elements of Monk, there's elements of McDonald and Dodds, there's even elements of Columbo here. He's only learning people's names. He knows nothing about police procedure, but he's super smart, and gradually he'll figure out what the clues are that will help him solve the crime. And then the overarching mystery is, where did the brother go? Why is the brother in hiding? And also it becomes apparent by the halfway stage of the series that not everybody at the police headquarters can be trusted. Some of them are obviously in on something. There's something happening as the clues come out. It's a funny show. Mm-hmm. It's a reasonably clever show. As I say, the first two episodes I liked, and I wished they had been a bit cleverer. The third episode, which I watched last night, was very clever, I thought.
See, I suppose on a show like this, you have to almost draw people in gradually. If you start a show like that with a big, huge cryptic clues, very deep, very serious, people are going to sort of slightly shirk back from it. So what you've almost got to do is do two fairly straightforward ones, lure them in, and then start piling on the crypticness. If you get too cryptic too early, you're going to potentially alienate your audience. So I can sort of see sense in that.
I'm nodding away here. You're absolutely right. Yeah, the murder of the week aspect was not that present in the first episode. Yeah. Second episode a bit more, but the third episode, as you say,
and you also
dominated.
Have to make it believable, because this is the sort of story, it could become very unbelievable very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's unbelievable, then, you know, you've got to sort of make people think it's at least vaguely,
possibly.
Vaguely credible. I share your love of Mitchell. I love What I Lie to You. I think What I Lie to You is wonderful.
Incredible, and isn't it? Yeah.
Some of the greatest moments on telly ever are David Mitchell versus Bob Mortimer.
Amazing.
As soon as Mortimer opened his mouth, poor David Mitchell starts
crumbling. It's
so wonderful. And if you haven't seen What I Lie to You, go on to it's all over YouTube. And it is so worth it.
Lee Evans is really so quick witted as well. The style of comedy is different, but he's quick witted. Rob Brydon then is just
It's Lee Mack.
Oh, Lee Mack. Sorry, Lee.
Lee Evans.
Their comedy styles are so different, and yet they're obviously very fond of each other as well.
Yeah,
especially
when David Mitchell. I'm very fond of his wife as well, Victoria Mitchell, who presents Only Connect.
Yeah,
and,
very clever lady.
TV
yeah,
as well.
Very funny.
But I mean, some of the times that when she is on as a guest with him, and Lee starts having a go at the two of them. Yeah. And some of the stuff that come out is absolutely brilliant. But we are digressing. Yeah. It's 22 minutes past 11. Going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to go back to Katie for a discussion about Arthur the King. As promised, we are going to go back to Katie to discuss Arthur the King. It's a project she's wanted to talk about for quite some time. But before we do, I want to go to Zoom and speak to Caroline Harvey, who is a filmmaker and director and producer of I'm Grand. And it's being shown as part of a series of films at the Disappear Here Film Festival in Ballyliffin. Changemakers presenting this series of films. It's taking place, as we said, in Ballyliffin on Sunday, the 6th of October, joined by Caroline on Zoom. Caroline, a very good morning to you.
Hi, Dylan, how are you?
Great, thanks. Talk to us about I'm Grand, because I'm going to tell you a story here. I was on holiday recently and I came across an American, and I gave her a hand. We were walking up beside a waterfall and she needed a bit of a hand. So I just helped her up and she said, thanks very much. And I said, oh, you're grand. And she said, why does every Irish person say you're grand? And she actually got me and videoed me on her phone explaining what the Irish concept of grand actually meant. So I'm really intrigued by this. You have a film called I'm Grand, because it's a phrase that will evoke a reaction in us as Irish people that others just will not get.
Yeah, I know. It was funny, and I wasn't sure whether to name it that, because you're pretty much keeping it very, very Irish that way. But it's just like the phrase that to me that people use that just gives you no sense of actually if they're fine or not. And yeah, it was, especially like with social workers, and when you're going through like the worst, most emotional moment of your life, and someone asks you, okay, to say I'm grand, is probably like the most, like, I'm not fine type of thing you can say. But, it's just such an overly used phrase here that's only in Ireland and it's very Irish specific. So it's something that I've heard used a thousand times a day.
But the actual subject matter of the film is quite serious, and we're talking about the level of burnout in people that work in social work, work with children, and it's a huge thing, because I'm sure when you're working with people's lives in that way and you're aware that what you say and what you do may impact on someone's life, the level of stress that's going to come from that must be huge.
Absolutely, because I was doing research with the author and he's a child protection expert, Shane Dunphy. He wrote the best-selling book, Wendy's Child. And so we were researching for a different film based on a book. And he was telling me about the huge burnout rate social work. And I just couldn't believe what toll that was put on them. And, you know, they obviously have, like, limited resources. But just the huge impact on their mental health and that, you know, the lack of support. And then you have to go in and work with deeply traumatized or distressed young people and families. And you have to take that on and be, and you know, struggling with your own personal issues and mental health. And that's not being taken care of or prioritized. To me, it was just insane. And I couldn't believe that Irish people, one, didn't really know that much about that and that we were dealing with it. And this is the conversation. If you're going to be taking care of the most vulnerable people, in Irish society, you know, you have to take care of the people that are taking care of them and that they were struggling so hard. And to me, it was just so fascinating that it just felt like it was something that have to bring this to the conversation and bring this to the table.
Is this something that Tusla needs to take cognizance of and be aware of? Because a lot of these people obviously are going to be working under the auspices of Tusla. And from that point of view, it must be surely incumbent on Tusla to make sure that people working on its behalf, either directly or indirectly employed, must be taken care of and must be at their peak. Because if the person looking after the children isn't at their peak, I mean, you know, it raises the question, is that going to compromise the help and is that going to compromise the advice being given to the children? And even from that point of view, it's important, not to mention the hugely important part of the mental health of the practitioners themselves.
Absolutely. And it seems to be, from what I've discussed with a lot of the contributors that are working social work, social care, child protection, from like varying different areas of the system, they were saying that it is getting better, but that it still has like miles to go. Like as opposed to 20 years ago, and 15 years ago and 10 years ago, it was, you were just expected to tough it out. You know, support was kind of offered, but you weren't really encouraged to take it. It was just this very, once again, Irish thing of you just muck it up and you tough it out and you look weak if you're not accepting help. But there's still like residual effects of that still to this day of, you know, accepting help. And I think there's like that stigma of accepting that maybe you need support as well. And people who want to be the helpers still feel nearly ashamed in the fact that they're getting help. And I think they're starting to, from what I've heard in college with the training, to really start looking at self-care. And it's starting to come in, but I think it's going to take a long time for that to really have an impact. But there's a lot of people struggling, you know, in varying levels in Irish society anyway, but this is a job where, you know, you're working in trauma and you're working in distress and you're working with people in poverty, that it's going to have an impact on you. And there just needs to be a lot, like you really need to push the welfare of people working in child protection. Like you just have to prioritize that, and it has to be something that you have to just put so much more resources into. And it's great that it is changing, but if you really want to make a change in children's life that are, you know, in crisis and families in crisis, you just really have to take care of the people that are on the front lines. And there needs to be just be far more of an incentive and prioritizing and put more money into resources there, just from the discussion that I've had.
There is an old cliche that a painter and decorator will live in a house that hasn't been painted or decorated for 10 years. Someone who is a gardener, quite possibly themselves, will have a garden that's unkempt and uncut, whereas the gardens they're all looking after are absolutely pristine. Is there a case here that those who are responsible for the mental health of others are not taking care of their own?
It seems to be. There are people, you know, that can, you know, that have really good self-care, you know, like tools in place and they can take care of themselves. But I think there's a balance of people that probably do get into child protection and social work and social care because they've probably been there themselves. And, you know, you're coming with this sense of wanting to help people because you've not had that. So one, it sort of triggers another. So you need to take care of your own personal issues before you go into that type of work because it's going to trigger you. But then also there's probably people that are so selfless that do put themselves on the back burner and go in and they get so consumed with wanting to make a difference that what happens is that you've just spent all your time and been such a Trojan that in the end you end up being the victim of your, of how much you care. And I think trying to find the balance and just raising that self-awareness for people that if you really, really want to help people, you know, it's that thing of self-love and taking care of yourself, you're a much better tool because you are the tool that you're using to help these kids. And, you know, it's not selfish to take care of yourself or understand when you do need help. And that seems to be, you know, the range of issues that happen in social work and social care.
Now, and fair play to the three childcare workers that actually allowed you film them, get up close to them. I mean, they're really opening themselves up now. I know that will have created sensitivities because you're going to obviously have had to make sure that nothing in your filming actually reveals anything or compromises anything about the children that they're dealing with or the situations they're dealing with and the work they're dealing with. And I know that will have presented you with a really big challenge as well to get the... to be as honest as possible with the three social care workers without revealing anything about the cases they're working on. And I'm sure that gave you as a filmmaker a sort of a difficult minefield to tread over. And I mean, by all accounts, you have managed to do so, if not with ease, but certainly deftly and with skill. And the finished product, as we said, going to be shown in Ballyliffin as part of Disappear Here. I'm Grand is the name of the film. Caroline, final word to yourself. If people come to see this film, and obviously we hope they do, what can they expect?
Well, at the end of the day, I do think it's a hopeful film, and it's more about empowering yourself to make small changes and to be kind and to realise that being present is a huge impactful thing that we can all do. Even if we're not social workers, we can make a difference by small kindnesses. So that's something I'd love for people to take away from the film, if anything.
This film was made with the cooperation of Changemakers, and I will acknowledge that you won the first Donegal short documentary bursary, supported by Concern Worldwide, and part of the Disappear Here Film Club that Changemakers are lead partners in. So it's great to see that bursary, which the launch of which we covered here some time ago, it's great to see that bursary has gone to a filmmaker who has made such an important film. Caroline, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you so much, Sean. It was a lovely chat to you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you. That's Caroline Harvey there. The film is called I'm Grand. And we all know, those of us who are Irish, we know exactly how nondescript and how absolutely all-encompassing and sometimes utterly dishonest that particular phrase can be. It's being shown, as we said, on the 6th of October in Ballyliffin as part of the Disappear Here Film Festival. It's the outcome of the first Donegal short documentary bursary, and hopefully it'll be a huge success. We'll take a short break. When we come back, absolutely scarts on her, cross my heart, hope to die, we're talking about Arthur the King. Katie.
Yes.
Talk to us about Arthur the King.
Okay, right. I love this movie, but Donal, for you, I'm going to delay this by 60 seconds because I have to tell you and the audience something. I this is very important now, was on the website for On Green and Theatre, and the tickets for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory that is performing next March are already on sale, and I was organising myself and Dermot's tickets for said show, and I just think it's really important that people get honest because they will be gone before Christmas. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that because it just came into my head there. I was like, I got so excited when I saw the tickets were already on sale. So I just wanted to mention that before.
And can I also mention that our friends in Letterkenny Music and Drama Group, directed by Tina and Myra, are presenting Shrek, and that's taking place in the first week of December. And, you know, I'm hoping people will come to our production of Charlie. Shrek's going to be a great show as well. And I was delighted to see this week too. They've actually announced, and this is really important, details are on the On Greenland website. I've linked to this actually on my own Facebook page as well today. They're doing a special edited sensory production of Shrek. I think it's the morning of December 6th at 11. It's a Friday morning, 11. If I'm right in my memory, it's December 6th, but I do stand to correction. Michael's dived for the phone just to double check it. But it's a special performance for those that would have sensory issues. They're going to take out some of the noise. They're going to take out some of the villains. They're going to take out some of the lights. They're going to edit it down slightly, make it a little bit more palatable, provide a quiet area and a quiet space in the theatre. I think it's an absolutely brilliant initiative, and hats off to Tina Myra and to LMDG. So that's Shrek is showing in December as well. So, you know, look, folks, you're going to have Shrek in December. You're going to have Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in March. They're both going to be fantastic productions. I know about Charlie. I'm involved. involved, obviously.
Yeah.
Shrek's going to be great as well. I mean, we are so blessed, and I say this often, we are so blessed in this area
to have the
acting talents. And that's not to mention one act plays, one of which is being directed by someone not all that far away from here. And that's taking place on tomorrow week.
Yes, October 12th. That's great. It's great. We have no worries at all that it's only a week away. No, we're in great shape. Three shows coming up, three one acts. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm not aware of the other two, obviously, but I know that the directors have good reins on the cast and the productions. And we're in tomorrow rehearsing as well.
Mutual friend Rachel Lacoach is involved in one of the other two, and she's fantastic. And she then is. In the Baller on the 19th, it's Friday the 19th, on the Friday the 18th, there's two one-act plays. There's one written by Conor Malone, A Matter of Rights, and there's one, The Man, His Wife, and the... No, The Wife, The Cat, and the Other Stuff. Is a one-act play. Andy McGranahan is in. I saw that during Culture Night. It is phenomenally
excellent.
Good.
Okay,
it
good
is brilliant.
Good.
So look, you've got one act in Ongrain, you've got one act in the Battle, you've got Shrek coming up, Charlie. There is so much local stuff coming up in our theatres, and it's great to mention that. Katie, finally, let's talk about Arthur the King.
I have to say that because I just got so excited when I saw the tickets.
Oh, it's 12 o'clock.
No, I'm now going to talk about Arthur the King.
I don't believe you, Katie. It's never happening. I don't believe you're really going to do it.
Shush, Michael. No, after much anticipation. This is a movie and it's on Prime and it was released this year and it stars Mark Wahlberg. Sorry, I'm a bit dosed. So this is a phenomenal true story. Now, I will say that there's nothing very, there's no big kind of moments in it or anything like that. It's just a beautiful story. It is a true story and it is just unbelievable, really and truly. But it tells the story of a Swedish adventure racer. Of course, he's American in the show. we'll just kind of overlook that a little bit.
Yeah, we're used to that. Yeah.
But Michael Light is the character's name, and he is returning to adventure racing after a number of years, and this is kind of his last chance to race. So he puts a team together. Adventure racing, in case anyone's unfamiliar, is basically getting from point A to point B through difficult terrain by kayaking, running, cycling, climbing. So they have to do all these different kind of, all these different disciplines are involved. And it's over the course of like 5 days and they have to do like 400 miles or 450 miles or something like that. So.
It's like the walk Fionnuala had to do that morning that she's mentioned hundreds of times since.
450-mile walk in Ardsvarth Park, yeah. So it's set in Costa Rica, I believe. And so you have like kind of this is the main story. And then you kind of are introduced to this stray dog in Costa Rica. It's kind of alongside kind of this other secondary storyline at the start, just kind of running alongside, was this stray dog that's kind of pretty unloved, injured, struggling to be fed, kind of, you know, being almost bullied by other bigger, stronger dogs on the streets and this kind of thing. But the story is of how this dog and our main character, Michael Light, played by Mark Wahlberg, come into contact with one another. And this isn't ruining the story in any way, but basically he comes into contact with the dog at one point in the race and then discovers the dog 200 miles further into the race in the rainforest. So the dog has followed him. And it's evident that the dog has decided to kind of to attach to him because he was the only one that kind of showed him any kind of kindness. And so they then take the dog with them to complete the race. And it's there are moments in it that are quite like will pull at your heartstrings. And I want to tell everybody because there will be a moment in it towards the end where you'll be like, why did she tell us to watch this? Because this is just making us all cry our eyes out. But I want to make it clear that this is a happy story with and everything in it. In the end, everything comes together quite nicely. But it's just phenomenal. It's phenomenal, first of all, I think, for the capacity of the human body and the human strength, endurance that people can go through, like with the right mindset. So you have the sport aspect of it, I suppose, the camaraderie. The coming together of people and things like that and how they all help each other out. And then you have this amazing, intelligent dog who's responding to being loved basically for the first time and how all that comes together. It is a beautiful, amazing, phenomenal story, and it's on Prime, and I highly, highly recommend it.
Well, I know my beloved and my daughter will be certainly watching that. That's right up their street. Ooh, I might actually join them. Yeah. Now, there's a certain type of film that they watch an awful lot of, and I one of the things they love most are the sort of Netflix Christmas films.
Oh my God.
All of which have exactly the same plot. And apparently 37 of them dropped this week.
Of course,
you and I will fall out if you start to say bad things about those.
I will say bad things about nothing, but I'll tell you something. All 37 will be watched in our house before December 25th.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
I can guarantee you. Yeah. Oh, trust me, every one of those is going to be watched. I will not necessarily be in the room when they're being watched.
Yes.
But you know, I have a very straightforward policy when it comes to films I don't watch.
Yeah.
I don't watch. I don't speak.
Yes.
I keep the hell out of the sitting room. I play Scrabble. I play Solitaire. I watch old episodes of House of Games on YouTube on my laptop, and I let the rest of them get on.
Yeah.
Well, if I can't count the amount of guys I know from high school that now work in a barn and are like really like best guys ever, and you know,
perhaps create things, you know, like build little dog houses.
Yeah, I would totally give up my $2 million apartment
to be with those
guys. Because of course you went to the big city to be a big high powered lawyer, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It all sounds really plausible.
But then you had to go home for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you met that old boyfriend whom you thought was a loser and whom you left behind. And
I'm
then
taking this
suddenly
down. This sounds
you realised that actually happiness is really found
in a barn.
In a barn. Yeah, yeah.
Making houses.
At Christmas time, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they all volunteer together down in the local community centre.
And will it possibly, finish then in the community centre, volunteering, feeding those who are lonely and actually finding that the meaning of life was at home all along.
Yeah.
What an amazingly original story.
What is wrong with you?
There
Why
are
don't
37
you
of them dropped out of the place. Going to take a short break. Back in a moment. Every week, one of our correspondents sends in a very comprehensive message and email to us. So I'm just going to read through some of these before we go, and then I want to preview something else before I go to you, Michael. Kristen Bell, Adam Brody's quotes about their ages in Nobody Wants This. That's very important. Sorry to hear about... do watch BBC Sunday Matinee's Chris Christopherson, who was in Oxford College and left to become an army captain. And yet Chris Christopherson passed away this week as well.
Yeah,
and we will acknowledge that, obviously. The music programmes have really been paying tribute this week as well. Considering it's 20 years, Veronica Mars and the OC still look very young, this caller says. I'm reminded of Greg's triple dilemma in via Michael's podcast review. Has he seen Sister Wives on the TLC channel? It's on Saturday and Sunday. That's probably how you live in the US. No doubt there'll be a contender for a 4-day week, and that's from Kevin in Dunloe. Kevin.
I love it.
Indeed. I want to say a very happy birthday to John Porter. John is 83 today. Happy birthday, and that comes to you, John, from Jimmy. I want to tell you that our competition, we have a winner. The song was Missing You by John Waite. And the winner is Dorina McGee Doherty of Gwydor. Congratulations, Dorina McGee Doherty. You have won a €200 voucher for Green's Shoes. Missing You by John Waite was the song. And as I said, it was on pretty much every week on MTUSA. You were nodding there, Michael.
Such a great show. So many happy memories. Like everyone does of our age group. We loved that show.
Yeah.
It was a big... Sunday afternoons and then the repeat on Friday night if you were in on Friday night late.
Katie, you're way too young to know what we're even
damn the
clue.
You don't know who Vincent had. No, you don't have a notion. Too young.
I'm very young.
You weren't even
a
twinkle.
Way too,
you weren't a twinkle in your mammy's eye at that stage.
Nah,
you were
wouldn't have been. No, we're going back to the mid 80s here. But I mean,
going back when everything was black and white.
Everything was black and white.
Yeah.
Our first TV was black and white. Don't
yeah,
I remember our first colour TV. I didn't ever walk, you know, to school barefoot now, to be honest. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you used to have to turn around and turn the working knob on the TV. Yeah, get up and walk across the room, you know, and wind up windows in the car.
They were tough times.
Shocking.
They were. Tough
we were
times.
Happy then, though, yeah. There were 150 of us living in the shoebox in the middle of the road. Okay, I want to mention, before we go any further, a person whom I know and have had the pleasure of knowing for an awful long time. They were in school with my daughter, as it happens. Aoife Sweetie O'Connor experienced the magic of Daniel O'Donnell live in concert, almost, in Ungrainland Theatre on Thursday, October 10th. Ticket price, €10, inclusive of booking fee. Look, €10. Inclusive of booking fee. Look, you wouldn't get it anywhere. Join Aoife for an absurdist autobiographical cabaret as they celebrate queer identity growing up in Donegal and their unironic obsession with wee Daniel, from their first meeting with Daniel as a baby to his surprise appearance at their mother's funeral. It's a rapturous love letter to the rural, queer, non-binary experience, to mammies and to our Daniel. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and go on, you'll have a cup of tea. Aoife Sweeney O'Connor is a multidisciplinary artist from Donegal. As I say, I know Aoife. I knew her mum, Maeve, who was an absolutely wonderful person.
Incredible.
And I'm honoured to know her dad and know her brothers as well. Look, I mean, if you're about, and sadly I'm not about actually, we're away that day, and I'm gutted to miss it, because I was chatting to Aoife and to Derek, their father, about this in the RCC a few weeks back, and I really wish I was going to see this, and hopefully it'll come back. But Aoife presenting this in Ungrainland Theatre, they're going to play an absolute storm. I've no doubt about that. And it's on next Thursday, or this coming Thursday, because I've had lots of discussions about next
versus,
and this.
Yeah. I never get
the
that.
10th of October. I don't know. People in Donegal
never
get
that.
Weird
never.
Sometimes.
Yeah, never get that. Don't get it. Don't understand it. Don't know what you're up to.
It's next. Every time someone says it's next Thursday. Okay. Do you mean this coming Thursday, or do you mean Thursday week?
Yeah.
I mean Thursday week, of course. But the Thursday week is not the next Thursday. No. But it is. Okay.
Do you mean
I'm
5 days' time or 7 days?
Indeed.
Or 12 days?
Yeah,
what do you
absolutely.
Mean?
Yeah. I feel your pain, Michael. I absolutely feel your pain.
It's terrible.
Michael, I want to go to you, and time is going to catch up with us. And I'm in the Cathaoirleach seat, as it were. So I am going to selflessly and shamelessly ensure that my pick of the week is discussed.
Oh.
And it happened to be on your list as well. And I knew it would be Agatha All Along.
Agatha All Along. So this is one of the Marvel shows that we have on Disney. Jack Schaefer is the lady behind this. She was the lady behind WandaVision, which is definitely one of the jewels in the crown of the Marvel. Absolutely amazing. And so, what is it, 3-4 years later, we finally get the sequel, the continuation. Catherine Hahn is an amazing performer who should be more widely known than she is. When she pops up on shows like Transparent, she steals the show with characters she plays. She really basically stole WandaVision by playing, I suppose we can say that it's a spoiler, but it's 4 years old, the baddie of that particular story. So now we get her version, and we pick up the events in her life some years later, picking up where she left off at the end. She was obviously defeated by the good guys, but this is her return. The show has put together an incredible cast. Deborah Jo Rupp from That 70s Show / That 90s Show. Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Rec, amongst other things. Patti LuPone, who's a renowned Broadway star, singing star. And other stars as well. And we basically find these characters, this supposedly, in air quotes, evil witch, as she sets out to regain her power and put together her own coven. The first two episodes, I haven't seen the third one yet, were amazing. The first one was a wonderful tribute to Mayor of Easttown, like a shot-for-shot recreation of the openings with Kate Winslet going out to the crime scene. They just recreated it.
Yeah.
And you can see that on YouTube.
Beautifully done, yeah.
Beautifully done. But in episode two, the show really came into its own as she put together her band of misfits. And it was all about this idea that she's sort of conning them because maybe she's not telling the whole truth. It's funny. It's incredibly inventive. There's nothing else on TV that I'm aware of that's anything like this. And you're watching a group of performers who are absolutely at their peak, who are clearly having a ball, giving it their all. And I love it. I mean, I'm sure you're loving it as well. You've probably seen the third episode. You're ahead of me.
Yeah, I have.
And it comes up from you as well for the same reasons, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. It's inventive. It's clever. And it's again, and I love Catherine Hanna. As I say, I've always seen her. She'd be, as I say, usually a supporting or key supporting player in things.
Yeah.
She's great. And you look her up. Oh, I remember her now. Mm. Finally, she's in the limelight and she deserves it.
I've always said that WandaVision probably, as far as, TV, and we include streaming services obviously in this, but as far as TV is concerned, WandaVision is probably the best thing I've seen in about 10 years. I loved WandaVision, I adored it.
Yeah.
And what I love about it is there's a certain moral ambiguity about it, which I like.
Yes.
You were talking about the bad witches and the good witches. Yes. Now, I mean, you know, was Wanda, who became the Scarlet Witch, was she good, was she bad? Yeah. I mean, if you go on to watch Doctor Strange and the multiverse madness. What was it? The madness of the multiverse.
The multiverse of madness.
But there is a very morally ambiguous.
And because Catherine Hahn is so inanely likable, we're going to root for her in this, even if it seems like her intentions are going to be to the dark side. We're rooting for her. We care about her. We're invested in this character because she's funny and likable. And if she just wants to dominate the world, well, so be it.
Michael Liddy, Katie McGee. You are both wonderful people, and I love you dearly. And this has been an absolutely fantastic show, as always. I've loved it. All the best to Greg and the team tonight. Want to say that hopefully they come 100%. Back with good news. All the best to the crew. Thank you so much to Caroline, who produced and has stayed behind and done a great job, as always. And most importantly, thanks to all our contributors, and thanks to you for listening. John Breslin's up around the Northwest. Goodbye.